Hi, good evening, everyone. Tonight's Tanya class has been sponsored by the Reichick family. Levi Reichick and his brother Yanki. This is for the schus of their brother, Neshama Yosef Yitzchak ben Menachem Shmuel David Alevi. Let his Neshama have a very great Aliyah. Last week we began the first chapter in Shar HaYichud VeEmuna, and we were learning about the oneness of Hashem according to the Hasidic understanding. The teachings of the Baal Shem Tov is that when we say that God is one in Kriya Shema Hashem Echad, it means literally that Hashem is the only existence, the only being. That Hashem is the only existence, there's no entity, no being besides Hashem, and that the creation does not present a challenge whatsoever to Hashem's unity. Hashem Echad, Hashem is the only one. And that's, Baal Shem Tov says that everything is Hashem and Hashem is everything. Alakus is alt and alt is alakus. And that is a primary theme and teaching of the holy Baal Shem Tov. He began to explain this based on the verse in Devarim where it says, you should know today, you should take to your heart that Hashem is the only one, ki Hashem hu Elokim b'shamayim imal, in the heavens above, al aretz mitochas ein oid, that God is literally the only one. So the way it's understood in the simple meaning, until the Baal Shem Tov came along, the way this verse is understood is that Hashem is the only creator. There is only one God, and that is Hashem, and there is no other creator but Him. And the verse is trying to tell us that we shouldn't think that there might be another God hiding somewhere in the heavens, or somewhere in the earth beneath the waters. We shouldn't think that there might be some other being. So the verse is saying that Hashem is the only one, to exclude another God. However, he asked the question, which we learned last week, why would someone be inclined to think that there is another God besides Hashem hiding beneath the waters under the earth? Why would that even occur to someone? You don't know what kind of thoughts and what kind of ideas people can have. True. Even if we should assume that someone would come up with some kind of explanation or some kind of understanding to believe that there are two gods and there is another God somewhere in the heavens or in the earth, why does the verse have to say, Vahashavosa elevavecha? Hashavosa elevavecha means not only are you to know it in your mind, to understand it intellectually, but you're supposed to hammer this message into your heart. You're supposed to nail it in, knock it into your heart, which would seem to imply that the heart might be in conflict. The heart might be resisting. The heart might be suggesting different than the mind. That even when the mind concludes, even if we were to understand come to the realization that Hashem is the only God, there might still be something in the heart or the emotionally this might be hard to accept. Though his question was, why would this be an emotional challenge? Someone can make some mistake in their mind, but once it's clarified in their intellect, in their reasoning, that there is only one God, why should the heart be challenging and we need to work on it, that we should feel this emotionally too? Therefore, based, however, on the concept of unity as the Baal Shem Tov teaches unity. The unity of Hashem means that there is no other existence besides the existence of Hashem. So now we have a whole new meaning on what this verse is trying to tell us. You should know today that Hashem Hu Elokim means that God is the only existence. He's the only power, meaning He's the only existence. In the heavens and in the earth, there is only Hashem and there's none but Him. That is something that the mind doesn't agree on. Definitely. The mind finds that very hard to understand. Maybe our faith, because the Baal Shem Tov said so, a tzaddik said so, but the mind should be able to understand that and conceive that what? That there is no other reality but God. What do you mean? There is a world. And there are so many things within this world that have an existence. Even if we were to study and learn, like he's going to explain at great length, how the inner content of the creation is really Hashem, and that the creation exists just as an expression of God, even if we are to accept that, we would still have a very big problem in the heart. Because the heart could not concede and accept this very easily. That there is nothing else. Because emotionally, the creation feels very, very substantial, very real, and a very, very meaningful existence and strong existence. So for someone to accept that, and especially since accepting that God is the only existence means is to the exclusion even of ourselves. And that emotionally we have a hard time. Because to live in that state, to live in the state of the recognition that there is no other existence but God, means the total elimination of our own ego. Which means that there's no such a thing anymore as I want, I say, I need, give me. That doesn't exist anymore. The person exists, if a person feels this emotionally, and if emotionally you feel this, that means you will live this way. This will naturally carry over into one's behavior. Well, that would translate into a behavior where the person is going to be continuously and consistently living the will of Hashem without any conflict, without any sense of I to conflict with it. The life, like the Avos, like the patriarchs, they lived this way. They were a Merkava. They were a vehicle for God. As it says, a vehicle means someone who has no will on their own. Just like a car, your car has no will on its own. It does wherever you turn it, to the right, to the left. You don't have to get into arguments with your car, deciding where to go. And the same is Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. There was never an argument. The will of Hashem, that's all they did. And they had no other desire, no other movement, no other expression in their life but Hashem. But we understand that that takes a lot of work. And even if we can understand it in our mind, that's already step one, but that's still a world apart from beginning to live that way because we feel that way. Because to ourselves, we feel very much that we are a somebody and a very real somebody and a very real thing. But that's what the pasuk is telling us. Know that there is only one reality. There is Hashem. In the heavens above and the earth below, none but Him. Now to understand this, to understanding and first make sense out of this. What do we mean there's nobody? But isn't there a world? The Torah says that God created a world. What's the world? Isn't the world a world? So he's going to explain this based on the teaching we learned last week from the Baal Shem Tov, that the creation is a perpetual ongoing thing. Creation is not an element, something that happened in the past, but it's something that continuously is recreated. It's a constant thing. There's a pasuk that says, La'olam Hashem dvarcha nitzav b'shamayim. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. La'olam Hashem, forever Hashem, your words stand in the heavens. So which words are these talking about? When it says Hashem's words are in the heavens, which words? So the Baal Shem Tov interprets this. Now which words are we speaking about? Peter Shah Baal Shem Tov, this is the Baal Shem Tov's explanation. That this is referring to the words of the 10 utterances. And actually the second utterance. Third utterance. In the second day of creation, the first utterance is Bereishis, Bara Elokim, Hashemayim, Haaretz, which included really in a subtle way all of creation. And then Hashem continued in the second, Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or, that was the first creation, let there be light. And then Vayomer Elokim, Hashem said, let there be a firmament. Yehi Rakia, let there be a firmament. Those words that Hashem uttered when he created the world, and he said, let there be a firmament, those words create, and La'olam Hashem Devarcha Nitza Bashamayim, those words continuously reside in the heaven to make the firmament exist, to make the heavens exist. If those words were to depart, were to leave the heaven, and go back to their source, then the creations, the heaven would go back to nothingness, to its state as it was before creation. Now, even though God said these words 5,769 years ago, so what do we mean those words are continuously in the heaven? For that he explains, and he brings two verses to prove this, that Hashem's words are not like human words. Human words dissipate. They disappear. You say it, a moment later it isn't here anymore. Unless it was recorded, it's not here anymore. Hashem's words are eternal. Hashem is eternal. So his words are expressions of him, so they're eternal. Devar Elokeinu Yakum La'olam. Hashem's word stands forever. Udvarav, as he says over here, another verse, Udvarav Chayim, his words are alive. Ve'kayamim La'ad, they stand forever. So when Hashem spoke, let there be a heaven, those very words are continuously saying, let there be a heaven, and giving the heaven its existence. Because as mentioned above, if Hashem was to, if those words were to stop saying, let there be the heaven, then the creations would go back to their natural state before Hashem got involved. What was the state of a fear before Hashem introduced got involved? What happened before Hashem got involved? There was nothing. There was no world. Now that Hashem put his input into it, which is what? His will and his desire and his word, let there be a heaven, that's what brought the heaven into existence. So now if Hashem will disengage and disinvolve himself, so then the heaven will go back to the way it was before Hashem got involved, before Hashem put his input into it. And that is nothingness. So the heavens would go back to absolute nothingness. And that's the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. La'olam Hashem, your words are always there to give it its existence. Step out of it. If Hashem steps out of the creation, creation goes back to its complete. And he says, how nothing? So nothing to the point that its existence will be erased as if it never existed in the first place. There won't even be a trace of its existence. Literally, equally like before he created. Before they created, there wasn't a trace of the heaven because it never existed. So too now, if Hashem was to pull back his energy from the heaven, it would go back to utter, complete nothingness. That was the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, where we left off last week. Now, that's very good when we deal with the heavens. How about the rest of the creation? The verse is only saying that about the heavens. So now we're going to begin inside. This is 13 lines from page 152, from the beginning of the Perek. The line begins with the word Yehi Rakia, and we are holding by the word V'chein Kol Habruim. Okay? So it says like this, V'chein B'chol Habruim, and so too in all creations. Shebechol O'ilamois, that is in all the worlds, Elyonim V'tachtonim, in the upper worlds and in the lower worlds. Meaning that we shouldn't think that this, even though the verse explicitly states this only in regards to the heavens, we shouldn't think that this is only true about the heavens, but rather, he says, this is something that is true about all creations, all beings, whatever exists, that the creations have to continuously depend on Hashem's life force giving them their beingness, giving them their existence. And he says, not only meaning the Elyon, in the upper creations, meaning the more spiritual creations, for example, angels in the worlds above, or other stars and entities that are in the upper world, in the higher, in the heavens above. And even Tachton, even the lower creations, the lower entities of this of planet Earth. Vafila Eretz Alazu Agashmis, and even this physical earth, not just the Shamayim, but even the Eretz, even the earth, this physical earth. Ubchinas Doime Mamish, and the inanimate elements of this world, the immobile, inanimate elements that show no expression of life, they too are charged with a godly charge continuously. In them there is also the spiritual dynamics or the godly life force that flows into them every second to give them their existence. Iluayim estalkis memenu kerega chas v'sholom. If it would depart from them, even momentarily, even for a split second, God forbid, ha'oisiyis masarim amoris, the letters from the 10 utterances, Shebehei nivra sa'aretz, which with those words the earth was created. Because as it says, Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim es aretz. In the beginning, Hashem created heaven and earth. And as the sages say, that the word Bereishis is also an utterance. So those words when Hashem said, let there be earth, if those letters and that energy would depart and go away from the earth, so then the earth would also return. B'sheishis emei Bereishis. The words that Hashem had infused into the creation in the 6 days of creation. So then what would happen to the world? Hoisechayzedes la'ayin ve'efes mamish. It would return and go back to absolute nothingness, as was before the 6 days of creation. To that degree of non-beingness, like it was before Hashem ever created it. Mamish. Why does he have to emphasize that even the earth? Because when we look at earth, we're saying over here that there is some kind of spiritual life force and godly life force that is vivifying the creation, that is animating the creation. So if you're looking at, so when we're dealing with the higher creations, we see some kind of animation. We see some kind of life in them. So even if we're dealing with those entities that were created on Thursday, fish and sea creatures and birds, or the creations of Friday, animals and so forth. So in them we see some kind of spirit. You say, that's God's life that he put into it, that is animating the animal. But how about the things that seem to be dead, seem not to have any energy whatsoever? So that's what he's adding, that even dead matter, which is just lifeless, and there doesn't seem to have any kind of force in it, they too are being continuously created and recreated from a godly flow. And the godly flow is contained within them. There is that. Is there an energy that's within them, giving them their existence? V'zeu sha'amar Arizal, and this is what the Arizal taught. That Shegam is bringing proof from the Arizal that even the inanimate things in this world, they too have a godly life. Because the Baal Shem Tov again said this about the heavens, and then he extended it and said it's true also about the rest of the world. But the Arizal emphasizes specifically that there is life force in. That there is some kind of spiritual soul that is within even inanimate objects. Shegam b'dome mamish, that even in the literal domain, even in the domain which is the inanimate elements, which are called silent. Dome means silent. Things that don't show any life. K'moy avonim, like stones. V'ofer and earth. U'mayim and water. And all these things. Yesh b'chinas nefesh. They too, the Arizal says, have a soul. V'chayis ruchnias, and spiritual life. What kind of life do they have? So again, in a bird, you see a life. There's a soul that's animating it, an animal. Even a tree, even vegetation. There is something that you can point that is spiritual in essence, that is not that is giving it its power of vegetation for it to grow. But a stone, what do we say? What is the content of that life? When we say they have life, it means there is the investment of the words of Hashem, osio sadibur, the letters of speech, ma'asar ma'amarais, from the 10 utterances, ha'machayos u'mahavos es adoimim, that animate and give being to this inanimate object, liyos yesh me'ayin ve'efesh alifnei sheishis emebedeshis. In order for it to be a yesh means a somebody, in order for it to be a something, from its previous state of nothingness, which it was before the world was created. Before the world was created, this stone didn't exist. Now that the stone is existing, there must be a force that's bringing it into existence. What's that force? That's a divine force that's giving it. And the Arizal calls that force a soul. So we look at an animal and we say there is a soul. There's a different kind of a soul. That's a soul that's introducing animation into the body of the animal, or into the human being, or even in the plant. There is the very substance of the plant. For example, if you have a flower and you cut the flower off, so you still have the substance of it. Or when an animal dies, you still have the carcass, you still have the entity, the very physicality of it is there. Besides for the physical aspect of it, there is also a soul that's animating it.
So that's what we usually call a soul. When we're dealing, however, with a stone, over there, there is no animation. There is no life force that's giving it life. Nevertheless, he says there is a different kind of a soul. The very fact that it has a beingness, it has an existence, which really shouldn't be, because for all time in the past, and even before there was a concept of time, it just didn't exist, and now it's existing. So there is a force that's giving it its existence, making it be, that's responsible for its existence, and that life force that is in it, the Arizal calls it the soul. Now the Baal Shem Tov, the Arizal, just said that there is a soul, and when the Arizal said it, it was very, very strange. It sounded like very weird. What do you mean there is life in a rock? There is a soul in a rock. Now the Baal Shem Tov explains what the Arizal means, that we're not dealing with a soul to say its own personal spirit. What we're saying that there is a soul in it, meaning a force that's giving its existence, making it exist, making it be. Now today's days, this is far easier to accept. Just in the last, after the scientific discoveries of the last a century and so, where we discovered that matter is really energy. So when before that they thought matter is just a dead thing. Now today we know that there is energy. Everything is energy. But what's that energy? So you're saying the energy that is causing the atomic movements, or the neutrons and electrons and all that spinning and turning of the rotations of all these things. This is the word of Hashem that is in it, that's giving it, making it, bringing, causing this energy and bringing it into its existence. Now, it's interesting. There is a story where demonstrates the continuous involvement of energy even in an inanimate object. The great Josef von Lublin, the seer of Lublin, had many students, and all the great Hasidic masters, so many of them were students from the Josef von Lublin. He had one student who was the known as the Yid HaKadosh, and he was from the younger students, and he, at a certain point, he went off and started his own court. He became a Rebbe on his own. Now all the students of the Chayza became Rabbeim and great masters and great Hasidic leaders in all the different communities, but they all did it after the Chayza passed away. He assumed a leadership and became and started a new group of Hasidim in the lifetime of his Rebbe. And that's where the Ger dynasty comes from, the Kutsk dynasty, and Ger comes from the Yudavish. He had different shittas, different opinions and philosophy, and he opened up a new channel of serving Hashem that was unique to that Hasidic court. The other students of the Chose were furious at him. Where does he take the chutzpah to do something like this? So they sort of separated themselves with him. They didn't. They excommunicated him. One time it was during a bris, and all the students of the Chose were at the bris, and the Yud HaKadosh came. And when he came in, they all left. As a sign of protest, they all went out. The only one who stayed was the Bnei Yisachar. Bnei Yisachar was later the great Rebbe of Dinev, and he decided that he stayed. And afterwards, the other seniors, and he was from the younger students of the Chose. And it wasn't because he agreed with the Yud HaKadosh, what the Yud HaKadosh was doing. It was just that he felt it wasn't nice that they all walked out. So later, he was reprimanded by the senior student of the Chose, and it was the great Naftali of Rapshitz. Rav Tolya of Rabshitz was rebuking him. And Rav Tolya says, what are you doing? I mean, where's the honor of our Rebbe and so forth? And he said to him these words, don't you know that when we take out the life of something, it loses its existence? It doesn't have any existence? And the Rabshitzer Rebbe was holding a cup, a becher, in his hand. And as the story goes, the becher just disappeared. It didn't melt or disintegrate. And it just wasn't there anymore. And he was demonstrating that if we as tzaddikim decide that something doesn't have an existence, it doesn't exist. Meaning you pulled the plug, that there is no life in it anymore. Which is a very big chiddush, because generally we know that Yesh Me'ayin, and Hashem creates me Yesh Me'ayin, and He creates something from nothing, but He never takes energy back. He never takes an existence, never pulls back life. When I was a kid, I used to sometimes think that if someone disappeared, you know where they are, maybe God just stopped creating him. And the life force just, who knows, he's somewhere. Maybe the person doesn't. But we know that doesn't happen. Hashem can take a soul back, but never reverts existence, matter, back into nothingness. Now, but the Rabshitzer Rebbe did that to indicate that. The conclusion of the story was that the Bnei Yisachar said to him that when you look at the Akedas Yitzchak, it says over there that when Hashem told Avram to bring Yitzchak as a sacrifice, so it says that the Malach told Avram, Vayom HaMalach Elokim, that the Malach, that Hashem himself spoke to Avram and he told him to offer Yitzchak as a korban. Later, when Hashem came to Avram and he told him not to stop, when Avram was about, when he's holding the knife over Yitzchak, when he was about to make the incision with the knife, it was at that moment that Vayom HaMalach Elokim, and a malach of Hashem came, and he told him to stop. So the question is, how come, and originally when Hashem commanded him to shecht Yitzchak, it was God himself speaking. And when it came to stop the slaughter of Yitzchak, a malach. So he said like this, and because in order to hurt another Jew, you can't even trust the malach. For that, it's only if God himself speaks to you and tells you you have to do something, that's what you would, then you do it. But not a malach. So to stop the Akedah, that could have came even from a malach. But to chas v'shalom cause harm to another Jew, that would only be from Hashem. And he was indicating that even you are all angels and you're all malachim, but to offend another one of ours, a colleague, and to hurt him, and that we couldn't do. But this is the clear thing that everything in this world has a life force coming from Hashem, continuously creating. Now this itself, just stopping right over here, the concept that the creation has to continuously receive its existence from the life force that is being transmitted to it continuously, already gives us, already illuminates the idea that the creation, shows that the creation is a very insubstantial existence. It doesn't have any of its own existence. Its existence is not attributed to the creation. We can't say that the creation exists. The heaven exists. The earth exists. A tree exists. An animal exists. It's not existing. Because the thing itself has no existence whatsoever. It's the fact that Hashem is making it and involving himself into the creation that he's giving it its existence. So it's God's existence that he's introducing into the creations to make them exist. So really, what is existing? It's Hashem existing through, he is existing and expressing his existence into the creations. So we already get somewhat of an understanding of this concept of what is it that we say, that the Baal Shem Tov says that there's nothing but Hashem. Even though Hashem did create the world, and even though the world is real, which means it really, it's not a fantasy. There really is trees, and there really are mountains. And we're all sitting here in this room. That is very real. But at the same time, since it's something that we can, it's not, we're not generating our own existence, and we're not responsible for our own existence, and that our existence is continuously contingent on Hashem's will and words that he's saying, and that he's continuously creating us, that's indicating that what? That it's not ours. It's not that we are existing. It's him that exists And he is introducing his existence into the creation, and that's the existence of the creation. That's just simply what is being said. However, as we're going to see soon, the Baal Shem Tov is really saying something far more profound. And the expression and the idea of Hashem's unity in creation, according to the Baal Shem Tov, is so much deeper than just this thought, that the creation is a perpetual thing. See, if we look at the creation as a one-time event, that Hashem said, let the world exist, he brought it into existence, true, ex nihilo, from nothing. He brought the world into its existence. Then we look at the creation and say, well, look at it. It's something of real substance. It's something of a real entity. True, it has its origins as Hashem, but once Hashem created it, the mountain is a mountain. The tree is a tree. But now we're saying, no. The mountain and the tree is not a tree, because it can't exist even for one split second without Hashem saying, let there be a mountain and let there be a tree. So that's indicating how the creation is nothing other than Hashem. So that's just a simple understanding of this, but on a much deeper note. To understand what the Baal Shem Tov is really saying, let's first preface something. Earlier he began, and he said, Upirish al Baal Shem Tov. This whole thought and this whole idea that creation is an ongoing thing, it's not something of the past, but Hashem is continuously making and recreating the world, he attributes this to the Baal Shem Tov, which is kind of strange, because when we look in Medrash, in Tehillim, on this very pasuk, La'olam Hashem dvarcha nitzav b'ashamayim, the Medrash seems to be saying exactly what the Baal Shem Tov says. The Medrash says like this, Ama Hashamayim kayam, what is holding up the heavens? What is cradling the heaven? What is holding the heaven and supporting the heaven? Al Devarcha, on your words that you said, Yehirakia, at the onset of creation, when you said, Yehirakia, let there be a firmament, it's those words that are supporting and giving the heavens their existence, even now. And that's what it means, La'olam Hashem Devarcha Nitzav Bashamayim. That your words, Hashem, are standing in the heaven, which means you are fortifying the heavens even now to give them their existence. That's Alma Shamayim Omdim. What is holding up the heavens? Your words, Yehi Rakia, is holding the heavens. Clearly, the Medrash is saying that Hashem is continuously creating the world. What the Baal Shem Tov is saying. So why does he say, Upirish al Baal Shem Tov, to something that was around that the Jewish people knew or has been already understood for over 1,000 years prior to the Baal Shem Tov? So it's interesting that Reb Shmuel, the fourth Chabad Rebbe, was studying with his father, the Tzemach Tzedek, and he asked him this question. He said, why does he attribute this to the Baal Shem Tov when the Medrash says this already? So his father said to him, I'm going to ask my grandfather. Only thing was that his grandfather, the author, the Tanya, had already passed on. But the Tzemach Tzedek said, I'm going to ask him, because as it is known that the Tzemach Tzedek would continuously get visits from his grandfather, from his neshama. He would come to him from the other world and speak to him and teach him and so forth and learn with him. So he says, next time my grandfather is going to be by me, I'm going to ask him this question. And later he called his son and he said, I spoke to the Zayde, I spoke to the Tanya, I asked him, and he told me like this. He said that Rashi, in the beginning of the book of Rashi, Rashi begins his Pirush with the opening, the first Rashi in the Torah, it begins with Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, why does Rashi begin with Amar Rabbi Yitzchak? Because Rashi wanted to commemorate and make a Zichroi Netzach, to make an eternal memory for his father's neshama. His father was Rabbi Yitzchak, so therefore he began with Amar Rabbi Yitzchak to give his father a place in his pirush, for the honor and respect for his father. And he says it's also we find in the Medrash and others that they would begin something with either their name or the name of whoever they wanted to make this as a zecher for their neshama. So too, he said. He said about his grandfather, the Zayda, wanted to commemorate, meaning he's writing a book to And this is really coming to explain the teachings of Chassidus, the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. So in right in the beginning of his book, he wanted to make a zikaron for the Baal Shem Tov. So he began with a pirush al Baal Shem Tov for this thing, to give a zikaron, to make an eternal memory for the Baal Shem Tov. Not only that, but he chose, it was this mimer of the Medrash, because the speaking about the third utterance of La'olam Hashem Devarcha, of Yehi Rakia, let there be a firmament, because the Baal Shem Tov was born on the 18th day of Elul, Tav Nun Ches, in the year 5458. So, and that year when the Baal Shem Tov was born, his birthday was on a Monday, which is the day that Hashem said, Lihi Rakia, let there be a firmament. So to make a memory for the Baal Shem Tov coming to the world, and the great light that the Baal Shem Tov brought to the world, he emphasized this verse, Lihi Rakia, the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov on the Lihi Rakia. Now we can't just say that that's insufficient, because if this is not a teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, and this is a teaching of the Medrash, you can't just take a teaching of the Medrash and put the Baal Shem Tov's name on it and say, okay, I'm saying this because I want to commemorate the Baal Shem Tov. So it's more than that. The Baal Shem Tov would continuously teach this teaching. This Medrash was always on the Baal Shem Tov's lips. I mean, this teaching. The pirush of these words, La'olam Hashem Tverach HaNitzah B'Shamayim, was a common teaching from the Baal Shem Tov. That you should know that the heavens are continuously contingent on Hashem, creating them and recreating them every moment. And we find that the Gemara, for instance, many times brings certain statements from Chazal in the names of various different teachers. For instance, we have it says, Shmuel HaKotan Omer, Pirkei Avos, it says, Shmuel HaKotan Omer, Shmuel HaKotan says, B'nefol Avecha Al Tismach. When your enemy falls, don't rejoice. Now, Shmuel HaKotan was a sage. The words, when your enemy falls, do not rejoice, is a pasuk. So how can Pirkei Avos say it in the name of Shmuel HaKotan when Shmuel HaKotan he didn't originate this? And the Gemara says, and the reason for that is because he would always say this. Since Shmuel HaKotan would always continuously, this was constantly on his lips, but we can attribute this teaching to him. So the same is also over here. This teaching could be attributed to the Baal Shem Tov because the Baal Shem Tov would always use, and he would always say this. And not only that, not only would he say it, but he was the one who brought attention to this. You know, there's thousands of Midrashim. People didn't pay attention to this thing. Jews didn't notice it. Tulam Baal Shem Tov, it wasn't something that people recognized. And he brought this Midrash to the light by teaching. That's also the meaning of the word Pirush. Pirush means also to spread something out. He spread this teaching. He taught this. That's the simple explanation of why he brings it from the Baal Shem Tov. However, as mentioned above, there is a much deeper explanation on what the Baal Shem Tov is saying. And that goes far, far more than what the Midrash is saying. And that is why when he says this is in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, it's not just the Baal Shem Tov is repeating a Midrash. And he was the one who just advertised this Midrash and made this Midrash known. But more than that, the Baal Shem Tov added depth and an insight into this Midrash that brings out the unity of God in creation and the oneness of Hashem with creation so much more than what the Medrash, and really something that the Medrash doesn't even say. An interpretation on this verse that is not really there in the Medrash. So for that we have to, however, look carefully into what the Baal Shem Tov is saying. As mentioned earlier, it seems like the whole novelty of the teaching is that creation is an ongoing thing. That the words that Hashem said way back then, Yehi Rakia, shouldn't be understood that this happened, this was said way back then, but that Hashem is continuously creating and saying Yehi Rakia. It's a constant thing. And the same is with all other creations, that Hashem is constantly creating it. But as mentioned before, that's something that the Medrash says already. But if you look carefully in what the Baal Shem Tov is saying, it's much more than that. Not only that God's words are responsible for the creation every second, but the Baal Shem Tov said that these very words that Hashem spoke, Yehi Rakia, these very words channeled into the heavens. They now exist within the heavens. These words exist in the earth. The words that Hashem spoke, those words were transmitted into the creations. And they're invested and they're enclosed in the creation. That is something that doesn't say in the Medrash. The Medrash says, what is holding up the heaven? Why is there a heaven? The heaven is being supported by the word Yehi Rakia. But it could be that God's utterances, Hashem's words, are outside of the heavens. They're way, way, way above in the infinite heights. In the godly realm, Hashem is saying, Yehi Rakia. His will is producing a heaven. His desire or his command is creating a heaven elsewhere. The creation exists separate from Hashem. But what is creating it, what is giving it, what's making it be, the words of Hashem is continuously making it exist. But here the Baal Shem Tov is adding something much more than that. No. The words of Hashem pervade the space of creation. They're invested within the creation. Those literal words were channeled into the heavens, were transmitted down into the very substances of the creation to give them their existence. Now this is a very powerful thing. Not only is the words of Hashem within the space of the world, in the world to create it, but more than that, they are enclosed and invested into it. See, to invest yourself into something, to be enclosed in something, you can only get put on a pair of pants if you fit into the pants. Which means you have to be measured and adapted to the clothing. Right? If the shirt is too small, you can't fit into the shirt. You can't fit into the pants. So to get into a garment means you have to fit yourself to it. And what we're saying over here, the Baal Shem Tov said, is that God fitted himself to the creation. He fitted his energy to the particulars of the creation. He didn't create the world in a distant state. Him being above, far, removed, in his infinite state, and created a finite creation. No. He contracted, limited his energy to every creation. That's why he's emphasizing the element that Hashem spoke when he created the world. The Mishnah says that. The pasuk says it. That Vayomer Elokim Hashem said. But without the Baal Shem Tov's teaching, one can dismiss that. And say, the main thing is not that Hashem spoke. It's not the words that God spoke. It's the will. Hashem wanted the creation. The will was verbalized. It was revealed through by Hashem speaking it. But the speech is not that important. The main thing is that Hashem wanted the world to exist. Like it says in a verse that there's a pasuk that says that Hashem created the world through his chafetz. That Hashem had a desire and the world was created from his desire. There is that concept. But that would mean a very distant creation. Hashem wants and the world exists. The Baal Shem Tov is emphasizing that Hashem spoke literally. Speaking the words to every creation, which means he communicated his life into. That's what speech is. Speech is communication. What's the point of it? The point of being is that Hashem got intimate with every creation. He got involved into the personality, into the characteristics of every creation. Not only did he come close to speak every creation individually, but he contracted himself. He condensed himself to be in accordance to every creation. Which means that when he created water, he made himself be, contracted himself to the parameters, to the limitations, to the characteristics of water. And that's how he created the water. To understand this a little better, we know that the creations come, every creation, its source, we're going to learn about it later, is in the divine ten, in the Yud Sfiris, in the 10 divine attributes. There is a source for every creation. And that's why there is such variety in the creations, different kinds of creations. For example, there are Chesed creations and there are Gevura creations.
are creations that stem from the attribute of Hashem's kindness, and there are creations that stem from attributes of Hashem's might. For example, fire and water. Fire stems from Hashem's attribute of Gevurah, and water comes from Hashem's attribute of Chesed. What do we mean that water comes from Hashem's attribute of Chesed? That means that the energy that there is in the water is Chesed energy. How do we see that? Water flows from a high place to a low place. What is kindness? Kindness is also a flow. When a person is being kind, you're generous and you're giving. That means someone who is in a higher position, because they have something that the other one doesn't have, is lowering himself down to the recipient to give, to share. So it's a channeling downward. That's chesed. So when Hashem created water, the properties of water don't begin in water. The element of water, that water flows from a high place to a low place, Hashem first made himself, so to speak, watery. He gave himself a nature of water, which is what? Kindness. To flow from a high place to a low place. And that manifests itself later in the creation as physical water, which flows from a high place to a low place. So the very character of downward flowing of water is not an attribute of creation. It's not the properties of the creation. It's the properties of the Creator. God assumed the property of water to create the water. Fire, on the other hand, has the opposite nature. Fire rises upward. Why is that? Because in the divine attributes, there is an attribute of Gevurah. And Gevurah means the opposite. Gevurah is contraction. Gevurah is discipline or severity. When you're being disciplined or severe, you're retreating into yourself. You're not giving. It's the opposite of kindness. So it's an upward flow. It's an inward motion instead of an outward projection. So, and that's what fire is demonstrating. It's going to a higher place. Instead of extending to what's lower, it's moving to somewhere higher. What is that? That's just a physical expression of something godly, of God's element of severity, of upward, of an inward draw of energy back into himself. And that is being expressed in the fire. And that is true not only, we're just emphasizing the two elements of the water. The element of the water that it flows down and the element of fire that it rises up. But it's also every other feature of water. The fact that water is wet. The wetness of water is not something that begins, is also there is something in the divine reality, in the divine element, in Hashem that constitutes moisture and wetness. Fire is dry. Because there is something within God's Gevurah, within Gevurah, that represents dryness. Every element of the fire and the water is there already, exists. Before it exists within the creation, it exists first in Hashem. Not because Hashem is inherently, has these features and these traits inherently, and these characteristics, no. It's when Hashem decided to create the world, He assumed and all these elements within himself, and through that he created the world. And that's what we mean that Hashem spoke to every creation. Speaking to every creation meaning he delivered his energy and contracted the energy to the specifications of that particular creation. Which would mean that every single creation has a different kind of life force. If God would have created the world from a distance, from a removed state, if Hashem would have not spoken to the world, but he would have created the world just out of will, out of desire, then all of creation would have the same force. It's God's will, Hashem's desire, that would be equal. Doesn't make a difference if it's a flower. Doesn't make a difference if it's a star. Doesn't make a difference if it's the heavens. Doesn't make a difference if it's an angel. All of creation would have the equal life force.
And that is the will of Hashem, the undefined will of Hashem, that he wants the creation to exist. It would be a uniform life force for all of creation. But Hashem didn't want that. Hashem wanted to get up and close with his creations. So he lowered himself down. It's sort of he bent down to every creation to create it. So it comes out according to this. There isn't any character trait. There isn't any feature within the world that doesn't first exist within God. If it wouldn't exist first within God, it could not exist within the world. So the redness of the apple or the greenness of the apple, the smoothness of the tulip, of the rose petals, the buzzing of the bee, the chirping of the bird, the lightness of a cloud, or the puffiness of it, the cold, the heat, every element, every feature, and every detail of details are something that begins with Hashem's energy first contracting and into that state, and then it's translated into the creations. That's a very big chiddush. That's new. That's what the Baal Shem Tov taught that wasn't known before. Something that the Medrash doesn't say. That Hashem invested himself into the creation. His energy came into the heaven. There's a different life force in the heaven. There's a different life force in the earth. And with every element of the earth, a stone has its own unique thing. Every species of frogs has its own unique life force, which makes this frog different than that frog. And this blade of grass or this plant different than the other plant. So the variations of the creations begin in the variations of the godly energy. That the divine energy has all these different characteristics in the that is assumed. And this is the meaning of speech in creation. Now we understand something very, very powerful. When we say Hashem is responsible for creation and he is the existence of the creation, if we would have to learn, yes, the creation is dependent on a godly energy, on Hashem willing the creation, even if we are to assume, like we thought earlier, that Hashem wanted the creation and his will has to continuously create the world every second. It's the will of Hashem that continues. Fine. True. Hashem has to will the creation every second into its existence. And if he would stop willing it, the creation wouldn't exist. That's all good. And that would show that what? That the creation doesn't really have its own existence. But still, after Hashem wanted the creation, at this very moment, when he wants the world to exist, what is the world? And what are the creations? The creation is a creation. That's who you are. Every entity, a tree is a tree, a cloud is a cloud, a bird is a bird. Because these features, these personality traits and characteristics don't exist in God. This is something that begins in the creations. So what are the elements of the world? They are their existence, their nature of who they are and what they are. That's theirs. That's not Hashem. It's only that without Hashem's will, every moment it couldn't exist. Fine. But now that Hashem wants it, the creation has some content. It is something. The Baal Shem Tov is saying, no. The tree is not only dependent on Hashem to get its existence because Hashem wants it to exist. The very, very aspect, every element of this tree, every aspect of it, all of its features, and all of its characteristics are really just, are in the divine energy. It's Hashem's energy that has assumed a tree-like character. And as a result of the energy being that way, it produces a tree. So what is the tree? If not for the godly energy that's there, and two things. It's first of all, the tree is continuously contingent on Hashem giving it its existence, continuously, but also it's just an expression of Hashem's deciding that he wants to be tree-like, or he wants to be bird-like, or he wants to be stone-like. These are not features that belong to the creation. These are elements in Hashem. So the creation has nothing. All that there is only Hashem. No, it's in every tree. It's in every creation, in all its specifics, and it's all the, and in all of its details. That is why he's now going to continue, going to ask the next question, which comes dafka out of this understanding that we just out of this deeper understanding in the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, that the creation is not just dependent on Hashem, but every aspect of it is an expression of the godly life force as it has expressed itself in that particular way. So he asks a question like this: if this is the case, then there should be, then there has to be, the word Hashem had to say every creation individually. Because in order for the creations to exist in the created realm, the divine energy first has to be in that state. So there needs to be words that are stating every single creation individual. Now, we don't find that in the Torah. In the Torah, we have a general expression of Hashem: let there be heaven, let there be earth, let there be the luminaries in the sky, and let there be vegetation. But Hashem doesn't say that there should be an avocado, and there should be a mango, and there should be an onion. He doesn't say that. He doesn't go through every letter in creation, let there be a chipmunk, and let there be a squirrel. He doesn't say that. According to this, everything had to be said. Because, again, it couldn't exist in the creation if Hashem's words didn't first adapt itself into that shape. And where does Hashem adapt himself to the particulars of the creation? In the words, in the letters that he speaks. So that's his question. Now, even though we're holding four lines from the bottom, and even though it's not mentioned the name of Evan, the word stone, for instance, is not mentioned in the Tan utterances. Shebet Torah, that isn't the Torah. Afopikain. So how can it possibly exist? Again, if we are to assume that Hashem is just creating the world just because he desires it, and that's how he can desire all the details, but he's not getting into the details, then it's not a question. Hashem didn't have to say everything. He said the general things that he wanted, and in his saying, he intended whatever he intended, and that's why all the details came out. But if we're saying now, according to what the Baal Shem Tov said, that Hashem is literally enclothing himself into every creation, channeling the energy down in the particular manner of the creation, if so, then it needs to be that every creation is found in the 10 utterances. And he says there is. The 10 utterances have within themselves the expression, the words, for every single creation, because Hashem spoke every single thing. Nevertheless, nimshach hayus le'evan, there is drawn down life to the stone, al yedei tzirufim, through combinations, v'chilufei oisiyos, an exchange of letters, hamizgalgalois, that are transported, b'reish lamed aleph sha'arim, in 231 portals, panaviyachar, frontwards and backwards. Koshekasa b'sefi yitzira, as stated in Sefi Yitzira. Atshem mishtalshol, until it descends, masar mamaris, from the ten utterance, the nimshach mehen tziruv shem evan, and it comes down and it's drawn from them the combination of the words of the word evan, vehu chiyusai shela evan, and this is the life force of the stone. Saying like this, when we read asar mamaris, we're reading only the initial utterances that Hashem uttered. However, those very letters that Hashem uttered, later, those letters continued to create the details of the creation. How did it do that? By various different letters coming together with other letters to form new words. It says, really, there is in the 10 utterances, there is a code that we don't see. It says when Bezalel created the Mishkan, it says Bezalel knew all the words which Hashem, all the letters and all the words that Hashem knew when he created the world. What do you mean Bezalel knew it? So we all know. So look in Bereshis, you see the 10 utterances. Say, yeah, we see the 10 utterances, but there's a secret code in the 10 utterances. And what is it? There are words that are hinted to, alluded to, but you don't see them. Because there are different combinations of words that come together from the very Aleph base. Let's say the Asara Mamaris, the 10 utterances, have I'm just throwing out a number. Let's say there is 1,500 letters, just for argument's sake, in those, in the Asara Mamaris. Those are the 50, so many Lamed, so many Beis, probably less. There's a couple of hundred. Let's say there's like 600-700 letters in the Asara Mamaris. Good. And they combine, and they make up all the words that there are. Now, what really, when Hashem spoke the creation, there are really like this, there are really, we take various different words, different letters, and we pair up one letter with another letter. So it could be that in the word Bereshis, there is a Resh. So they take the word Resh from Bereshis. We take the Shin from another word, even from Bereshis, for instance. And we take the Vav from the word Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. We take the Vav from Or. And we put these three letters together, and we have the word, we put together a word Shin Vav Resh. Shin Vav Resh spells the word Shoyer, which means an ox. Now, we don't see that Hashem ever said, let there be an ox. But he did. And it's because of a combination of taking different letters, where the letters got combined with other letters. There's a system of connecting, there's a puzzle, and a system of connecting words together that are not visible to our eyes, where words are connected. Now, there are many different ways on how we create new words. Not we, how Hashem created new words from the original letters that are in Asara Mamaris, from the original words. There is one way of called, as he calls it, tzirufim. Tzirufim are taking letters from one word with another word and combining them together to create new words. That's one thing. Then there is another way of getting new words, and that is by exchanging a letter. Not combining letters that there are there already, but changing the actual letter. Which means, when you find a bays in the Torah, the bays can be changed with other letters that come from the same organ of speech. So we know the bays and the mem both come from the lips. So it's possible that when Hashem created the world, there is the bays that he originally said, and then there is the exchange where that letter was exchanged for a mem that you don't see. It's not written, it's not obvious in the Asara Mamaris, but there is a mem that comes instead of the bays and stands in the place. How can you exchange a mem for a beis? Because they both come from the same origin. By this system of combining letters and exchanging letters, and we're going to get more into detail into the next class, by the system of combining and exchanging letters, through this, there is actually the utterance of every single element of creation down to the tiniest little subatomic particle. Every little detail of the creation has its name, its life force, which Hashem spoke to bring it into existence. It's just that we don't see these letters because they get into millions and millions of different substitutions of letters, but they're all there in that first chapter of Bereshis, because all the substitutions are taken from the original letters. Why do they have to come through substitutions? And the answer is, he's going to explain that in next week's class, because these tiny creations cannot receive their life force directly from the first utterance. The life force has to be downgraded and contracted more and more and more until it can come into these tiny little creatures, or else they wouldn't be able to withstand such intense energy. The substitution of letters causes the life force to be diminished and diminished and diminished, so the energy can come in and create an individual way. All right, we're going to stop over here, and we should all have a good week. And Be'ez Hashem, I'm going to continue next week, Sunday.